What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Into Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turned Into Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turned Into Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamien. I play in a band. More information can be found at FUCKEDUP.cc.
As far as a correction in the episode, at one point I refer to Matt Dillon as Matt Damon.
Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic.
Oh, it's working.
God damn it.
Probably because I touched it.
I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of like nerding out a little
bit. No, please. Right now, take.
Can I look at it?
Inspect. That's wax residue. That didn't come with it. That was THC wax residue.
I wish that was poop.
Yes. I put feces on it for
a like, God, dude, I did a fucking interview with a singer and fucked up and he had poop on his mic.
I'm like really
G.G. Allen moment.
Exactly. I'm like budget G.G. Allen.
Yeah. You're like, every once in a while I need a really big one when I'm
exactly.
On stage,
you know? I think the first time I ever saw anyone do it was Propagandhi do like shove something up their ass
a
on
stick,
stage.
Drumstick.
Yeah, it was right. A drumstick. Yeah. It was a...
I saw him do that once.
It was a real... Street. Eye-opening experience as a young kid.
I worked as a janitor before my band got really going. I used to paint houses, but I there was a period of time in the really early days of the band where we were kind of couch surfing and stuff, and I started working as a janitor at the like club that got the gigs. And the whole thing for me was the same reason I used to work in a record store, to get free records.
Yeah.
To get into the shows free, right? And we had two rooms. We had one big room, kind of room that like Public Enemy would play, and it was awesome. And then there was this little room upstairs, and the last day that I worked was the G.G. Allen show. And I obviously knew who he was, but I wasn't really a fan, but I knew all the stories about him, you know, like he would, I'm pretty old, and he had, like, he would make these flyers every year or so that would say, on Halloween night at the Roxy, or, you know, it wouldn't be the Roxy, like Godzilla's or whatever, some little club, any club or something, I'm going to kill myself on stage. You've heard about this.
I've heard, right?
Yeah, and then, of course, he would never do it. And anyway, so I knew about him. I knew he was like this, you know, it's like, it's the boogeyman thing. When you haven't met them. Half the time you meet these people that are so crazy and have these, all these stories, and you meet them, they're just like, hey, man, nice to meet you. And you're like, weird. Totally nice guy. But I never met him, but later became friends with a guy that was his best friend and said he was like a super sweet guy, which of course makes sense. But at that time, I was like 15 or 20. No, 20. I was 20. Why did I say 15? I was 20. Yeah, and I was a janitor, and he played upstairs, and I was like, oh, big scary show, G.G. Allen. And I went to the show, but I was working, and I went upstairs at one point, and I saw him. He had, you know, he was doing the mic thing. He was bleeding like crazy. And then the show ended, and all I can tell you is this. I looked at the walls. I looked at everything. AIDS was well on its way. You know, this is much later than 1981 or whatever. And so I saw that, and there was poo all over. There was like these like long lines of like he flung diarrhea, and it was like up onto the ceiling. And they were like, "All right, have at it, bro." And I was like, "I'm done. I'm sorry, I can't do this." And I'm like one of those guys. Like, I was a guy when people were sick from drinking too much, where I would go, "Yeah, I'll walk you to the toilet, man. Just hop on." And then they would just throw up all over me and be like, "Whatever." I never was bummed by feces, blood, vomit. Like, it just never bothered me. But for some reason, I was like, "This is too much."
Well, it's Gigi's poop. It's a different consistency, like, I imagine.
Some kind of weird LSD in it or something. Yeah. Or, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter, but...
That puts you in the line.
I regret it, though. I should have done it.
Well, that also... I'm just saying that puts you in the line. Well, I don't think you should have done it.
No, I wish I had, because I tell the story, and every time I go, God, what a pussy.
You know? I think you made the right decision, because it's like one of those things where, you know, you got to quit your job... You know, like, Gigi didn't get one over on you. Like, Gigi probably thought every day, I'm getting one over.
Showed him.
Someone at that club's going to have to clean this up, you know? The club that mistreated me. Yeah. Now they're going to have to clean up my poop.
My boss was like, I totally get it.
Yeah.
We'll get the Mexicans to do it. And I was like, oh, now I feel awful. Oh. Like, great. Yeah, you know, get the fucking poor. I mean, it's just weird because, you know, I would wear those, like, kind of kitchen dishwashing gloves and pick cigarettes out of urinals all night, you know, and worse things, you know, and it didn't bother me at all, but somehow that one did, but yeah.
Well, they put you in line of great punk rock custodians, like El Duce was the custodian at the Mask, you know, and so...
Wait, are they cursed people?
I don't know, you tell me, but Joey, I want to thank you so much for doing this, because this has been a big thrill, like, obviously... Been on tour, nodded hello in the morning to you a couple times on Soundwave.
Yeah,
but we've never actually talked.
So. I know, that was really weird. Well, that tour was weird.
That tour was really weird.
I think for you, but for us, it was not a good time.
Yeah, I heard some from other people in the band that it was like
for us
it was rough at times.
We had two. Well, yeah, it was not a good time.
No,
so I'll leave it at that.
No, like,
there's no. It's not interesting to people listening.
No, exactly. We don't have to go into that. Yeah. But I want to start off.
Also, we did Fun Fest.
Yeah, I was gonna say we played a lot.
And we were like, you know, right before you guys, right on the whole stage, and I watched you guys, and it was awesome.
Well, that's like
so good, and that was the first time I had seen you guys. So I just was like, wow, this band is a killer.
First time I saw you
didn't, you know,
was with Screw 32 at the Alma Combo. Up the street.
Jeez.
Here. I want to start. This is not about me, though I will,
let's
unfortunately, as Melanie knows, insert
I'm
myself.
I'm going to make this about you.
I will, believe me, I do a pretty good job about making this about myself, too.
Good, go for it.
As I already have illustrated.
Takes the pressure off me.
Yeah, but I want to start it off the way I start these all off, which
okay,
is.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Do you remember how you got into punk? Do you remember the first time?
Yes, I do. Well, you know, obviously it's always a little bit.
Yeah, well, like the first time you heard it, or even.
I had. The first time I consider hearing punk rock, sort of depends on what you call punk rock. Because obviously I'd heard the Stooges and I'd heard MC5.
Well, that's...
There are these people that make that argument. I wouldn't have made that argument because I was like 9 when that stuff was going on.
But where were you hearing that stuff?
Well,
that's
I was alive. So if you were alive, you got to hear that music. And I thought of that as like heavy, sloppy rock.
Yeah.
And I wasn't into it. I was into like kind of precise... You know, I liked Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know. And Kiss.
Okay.
You know, like I was, I don't know how young, but probably like 8 years old or something. But the first thing, the records that I started thinking of as punk was like first time I heard the Ramones.
Mm-hmm.
First time I heard Nevermind the Bullocks, you know, the Pistols and that. And those records, you didn't, it's odd because you didn't have to... Be like, you didn't have to have a mentor. So the reason I'm bringing all this up is that I don't draw the line to the first time I heard punk rock when I heard a band that is considered a seminal punk rock band, because the Ramones had a song on the radio, you know, the Pistols were this big deal that had made all this trouble in England, and I mean they were kind of mainstream immediately, you know, in a way that, you know, my mom, if I went, yeah, or she go, oh, the Sex Pistols, I've heard about, you know. So that really it was fresh fruit for rotten vegetables, the first Dead Kennedys record.
Okay.
And to me, like, that record, I got it, and it was like, I was, you know, it was hyper, it was hilarious,
mm-hmm.
and the songs ruled, and I just That was the band that, and then I got my mentor.
But where did you, prior to that, where were you hearing about these, just on the radio? Were you listening to rock radio? Was that
It would just be some screwed up kid in my school, you know, that I always thought was really weird, that walked alone in a trench coat and, you know what I mean, looked like he was about to pull out a gun and murder people long before all this other stuff happened that was really like that. And it was that guy, and there was Nathan Marsack, was the guy who gave me the Dead Kennedys record.
Okay.
He was like, he saw that I was into Devo. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it was wearing a button. He was like, you should listen to this. It was a cassette, of course. And then the real mentor, though, the guy that deserves all the credit, especially because he was one of my dearest friends for like 30 years of my life, and he passed away a few years ago, is this guy, Matt Davis, who was the... And this is why I bring him into the fold, because he literally kidnapped me. And like, I was a drummer, and I was in one of my first bands that actually performed, playing at a birthday party for my girlfriend.
What was the
at
band?
The time? The band was called White Rock. And just to put some perspective on how terrible this was, I had an Iron Maiden baseball jersey on, a Killers Iron Maiden baseball jersey from a concert I'd gone to. I had two kick drums.
That's awesome that you saw Iron Maiden on the Killers tour.
I did, yeah.
That's killer.
I'm one of the few, yeah. But, yeah, and so I had two kick drums, and my band was a cover band, and we did, like, the Cars, but somehow we did Stairway to Heaven. I mean, it was, like, a really terrible band, like, really terrible. And the day of the party, my girlfriend broke up with me after our show and started dating our singer. So it was it was a killer night. But Matt was there, and Matt was one of like, I think, you know, he's sort of famous because I was just about to go into high school. I was in junior high, and I'd heard about him. And, you know, there weren't that many punks in our town. It was a small town. And he was one of maybe like 10 punks in our whole town. So when you saw those guys, you knew they were like, tough, because they would get beat up by the Mexican gangs, because we had a lot of gangs where I grew up, you know. Mm-hmm. And Matt, you know, they would always have the color spiky hair, and we're talking about 1980, you know. It's like it was a real
deal. pre Nirvana.
So they're standing there, and he's got this big, like, he's got John Lydon on his shirt, you know, like this big pill shirt, or I don't know, maybe it was even just pre, but he's sitting there in front of me with this big spiky hair and like a leather jacket and some other guys that look super scary, and I'm at this, like, you know, John Hughes fucking movie party, and he's just watching me like this, and I'm not good, you know. I got two kick drums, and the piano player's playing Stairway to Heaven, like, it's just wrong. And he comes up to me on the show, he's like, "You're pretty good, kid," and he goes, "You should be in my band when you come to high school. You going to Santa Barbara next year?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's summertime or something."
Yeah.
And he drafted me, and then the first day of practice, we went to the garage, you know, it was our rehearsal studio, it was at Matt's dad's house in like a basement, and we went down there, and it was super punk, like they even had a bunk bed like in the wall that had a sheet on it that said Superficial Love Room, so people could have sex while we were practicing. And the bass player came over, and he grabbed one of my kick drums, and he threw it in the corner and took a shit in it. It was the first day. And so those guys were like, that was my introduction. They were really good guys, but they were like, here's how it actually goes.
Yeah.
And then Matt, basically for the next few years, used my allowance to buy punk records that were supposed to be mine. But by doing that, they were older than me, these guys, you know. By doing that, he turned me on to, like, I within a year, I knew everything that had existed, you know.
It's like punk university tuition.
Yeah. It was what do they call it? Hazing.
Hazing, yeah.
But later in life, you know, Matt became, many, many years later, Lagwagon was doing well, and I'd run into him, and he was really strung out, and, you know, he'd gone that way, and he, you know, he would say, "God, I'm so proud of you," you know, because it was like that kind of, and I'd just be like, "Oh, this is where it gets to be a bummer." But he got sober, and when he got sober, our relationship, like, switched. Mm-hmm. And then it was like me trying to help his bands. Like, I would produce his new band for free and, you know, take him into studios and pay for things. And yeah, I don't know. It's just cool. It's like, and that's the thing about punk rock. It should be like that. It should, mm-hmm. You should have mentors and people that you know, it's about people.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, once you were brought into this band, I guess you had, you were in the scene, right? Like, did you go immediately start going to shows?
Well, I fucked up my hair pretty quick and started arguing with my mom. I started doing drugs, a lot of drugs. I got thrown out of the high school for vandalizing, for spray painting. My band was called Urban Assault, and they...
Did you guys record anything, right?
We did. There's one demo, which I've been trying to get my hands on for like 30 years or whatever, because we recorded in like 81.
Urban Assault. I will look for it.
It's absolutely impossible to find. There's like one guy, and he's like annoying, and he has it.
Is it Brian GTA?
It's not even anybody that was ever in any Narcore band or anything. But, you know, Matt Davis, he was the guy, he was in Rat Pack.
Yeah.
You know,
the Narcore. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's Chris Shiflett was in Rat Pack with him.
Yeah, too, right? way later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Chris was like a little brother to me. Like, I grew up with a Shiflett, so
well, he did a tour. Like my brother. He was in the band. You know, he did a tour with Lagwagon.
Yeah, he filled in, like, he did South America with us in Canada because our Flip, our guitar player, for a lot of time couldn't get here. So we had to bring, we brought both the Scott Shiflett, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's a small town, that town, Santa Barbara, and it's a very weird town because, you know, on the surface, it's a town that looks like it's a beautiful Riviera on, you know, the ocean and all that, and there's a lot of money there. But what there also is a lot of people that don't have money that work in the service industry and have access to, like, just a lot of drugs. And there's a police force and a city council that doesn't want kids to have fun. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you got kids going, oh, we got a skate park. Oh, it's done. Oh, we got a club. Oh, it's gone. Like, everything fun just gets shut down. So everybody just does drugs. So, yeah, it was a kind of a weird, dark underbelly. And I think that's why a lot of people come from there. And I don't know. I've had a lot of theories. But I got to, like, the 50th dead friend on my list. And I was like, I'm leaving. Jeez. I just can't be here anymore. It's a weird city.
Yeah, I guess that the West Coast of America has this like idealized vision, picturesque thing to people like it around the world.
Yeah.
But you go there and yeah, there's like drugs. There's, well, especially in punk and hardcore, a lot of violence, a lot of.
And you don't see it if you don't live there. That's the thing. You can go to these towns and judge them at face value. I mean, I remember this one time, Tim Barry, not even any years ago, he played in Santa Barbara. And the next night he came to San Francisco where I live, you know. I've been there about 20 years now. And I, you know, we were talking before the show and we were outside having a smoke or something. And he just had to walk in the store and go on stage and play. So just right there. We're talking. He's like, yeah, I was in Santa Barbara. I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of, I'm trying to explain to him. You know, when you play a club there, you just pass through. It's like, you don't really, you know. But I don't defend it either. But then he walks on stage and he immediately, like, basically kind of eviscerates the town I grew up in, you know? And everything he said was sort of true if you didn't know the place.
Yeah.
But it was like, I almost felt like, oh, man, we were just talking. What are you doing, Tim? You know, but
yeah.
I don't think he meant anything by it. But a lot of people will travel to towns. I've done it myself, you know? And I go, oh, that's that place. Like, it's just all rich kids and whatever. Or oh, that's that place. It's super sketchy. Like, you can't park your van anywhere. It's going to get robbed. And then later, you go there three more times. And all it was you just never went to the part of town that was great.
Yeah.
You know, you meet someone and they go, I'm going to take you a good breakfast spot or something. And all of a sudden, you're like sitting in like a harbor or something, you know.
It changes
everything.
You know
what I mean? Like Bristol in England, you know. We used to play, did you guys go there?
So oh, we played
there. Did you ever play the Croft?
Yeah, we played the Croft, yeah.
So like the Croft is where you always go, right? And you're like, this is fucking Detroit. Like, what the hell is going on? And then all of a sudden one day you play in this other part of town and it's just...
It opens your
like,
eyes.
It's just beautiful.
I mean, that's the problem when you're in a band. You get these little windows, and if you're unfortunate not to get a good little window, you never think much of it. It
takes a long time.
Well, back to, you mentioned Narcore.
Yeah.
Was that kind of the scene that you fell in with immediately?
Yeah, we played Urban Assault. That's all we did. We played with Aggression, Dr. No, and those are all our pure bands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? And this is like... pre-RKL, so it was really early
Cedo Vice Squad?
I mean, Cedo Rats were, I was one of them.
What was it? Cedo, pre-RKL, weren't they called Cedo Vice Squad? And Josh Brolin was the drummer?
They probably did something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Josh was one of my best friends.
Oh, really? Yeah. Because, like, I just blew up his spot that he was secretly in RKL in a Yahoo interview. My friend
was in the original incarnation of RKL.
Really?
Yeah, I was in a band with Jason Sears.
Yeah.
And I would play with Bomber and Chris Brest.
Yeah. You know?
And I was like, I got this guy, he's your singer, like, it's going to be great. And then I was always getting grounded by my mom because I was always in trouble. And I was grounded so much that one day those guys just came over and said, look, dude, it's going to work out. I'm like, I put you guys together. But then they played me like a demo of Bloodstains. I'm doing Bloodstains with Agent Orange. And it was so good. I was like, yeah, you guys are better without me. I can't.
Oh, that's what they did.
I was trying to play guitar, you know, and Bomber. I remember watching Bomber learn his first drum beat, you know, sitting there like just fucking around with him and Chris at Chris's house. And he had a drum set and he'd be like, you know, like doing something like that, right? Like that every drummer does at first, you know, just eighth notes. And all of a sudden he's like, you saw, wait a minute, what does that, what? Yeah, I mean, that guy was just amazingly talented.
So do you, are you from the Church of, I guess, the Church of RKL, like Mike and a lot of people from the West Coast seem to be, or like
I am, but I think it was a little different for me because I grew up with those guys.
You were on the inside.
Like, Chris Rest and I were on a soccer team when we were 8 years old. I've known him my whole life.
You know?
We were called the Sabres, you know, and it's different when you're catching polywogs with a kid. And then punk comes along later. And I'd already, like, kind of, by the time RKO was starting to go, I'd already kind of done all these horrible things and gotten kicked out of schools. And I was in, like, a special kind of program thing. And I was, like, trying to get off some stuff. And I was already, like, I blew it out when I was, like, 15. You know what I mean? Like, by the time I was, like, 16 or 17 or whatever, when those guys were kind of getting it going, I was, like, yeah, I'm already over this.
Yeah.
Like, and I was going to a weird school. There was only 9 kids in my school.
Wow.
And it was, we had like a yoga class and karate class. And and on Fridays, we just went to the beach and surfed.
Wow.
Like, it was super weird. I saw all these hippies and it was good.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Out of it.
Yeah, I had to go there, and I kind of got my life together. And for years, like people like Matt, you know, I was talking about, he would kind of drop by the school every once in a while and be like, dude, we got to get you out of here. And I'd be like, no, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
I need to be here. Like,
of course.
Yeah. So by the time RKL was starting to get to be a good band, I admired them, but I wasn't really in the scene. I was kind of already like trying to
get it,
steer clear of it, yeah. And I got sober too. I was sober for a bunch of years.
Well, I guess that did that time in with any of the like Uniform Choice, Santa Barbara, or like that they weren't from Santa Barbara.
No,
I guess like that.
Straight Edge, yeah. Well, that was a little later too. I think. I mean, I guess like 87, 86, like bands like No for an Answer.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And those bands, I was really big fan of the Straight Edge bands. I really liked a lot of Inside Out, and you know, those are the LA bands.
Yeah.
I went to a bunch of those shows. And because they were just like, that was really good hardcore that those bands were playing. But I, But, you know, again, it was like always, after the really early stuff for me, everybody has a thing they call punk rock. Most of the people I meet, they talk about my band's early records, and I you know, because they're at my show, so they're saying, yeah, man, it was like in the early years of punk, and I'm always like, God, I'm so old, like, that was like a last-ditch effort. So, yeah.
That's the thing about this genre that I think is so amazing is, like, you know, here we are talking about it all these years later when, you know, people were saying, oh, it's over by the time Black Flag showed up.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, it's over now. Like, all these kids are coming up from the beach.
Yeah.
We don't want these kids or our shows.
There was a general feeling in the air in Southern California that by 85, like, everybody was like, yeah, punk's dead.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was. Because all that great L.A. stuff that was happening in the early 80s, it was just kind of already getting annihilated by other things. And it just... Yeah, there just weren't that many shows, and then the shows started to, I think it almost like got too big,
because
they started having these big punk shows that would have, you know, I mean, you see these old flyers where it's like 10 seminal Southern California bands on one bill at like an auditorium, and those
Golden
were always...
Golden Voice was doing them, like,
yeah,
they were like big shows.
And they would be these, yeah, exactly, and those shows would like never... go all the way through, because sooner or later there'd be a fire and cars getting turned over, or the cops would show, you know, these famous stories. I didn't really go to any of those, because by then I was kind of in a convent at that point. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, so, you know, it's different for everybody. I always cite this one thing, and it was the premiere of The Decline of Western Civilization, the first one, you know?
Yeah.
The only one, really. The other ones are funny.
Yeah.
But
the third one's...
But it was like anti-flag, or the anti-club era, like...
Yeah.
And they kind of... I mean, I was like super excited when that came out, but I don't think Penelope's Ferris really knew about that scene, because it was like... It wasn't right. It was incorrect.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you know about a scene, and then you see the movie and go... Almost.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, they didn't fill in the dots. To me, like...
I guess it's when you're more of an outsider by that point, too.
Yeah, and she'd just done that really superficial, Sunset one, so I felt like that this is going to be cool because The Decline was so great.
Yeah.
But I imagine half those dudes in The Decline, you can't get them to talk about it, first of all.
Well, I saw someone posted a photo the other day on Instagram with X-Head.
No.
Like, as
really?
An adult. Yeah.
Dude, Yeah, I used to see that guy all the time, and then this one day we saw him, and it wasn't X-Head, it was Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I swear to God, I hate cops. Yeah. And Max, fucking cops, you know. That guy, we would see him at like 7-Eleven, be getting like, you know, beers or something before going to a show, and we'd see him in like a Volkswagen van, and... Somebody would like quote the movie to him, and then a bunch of like big dudes would get up and would just fucking leave him alone. Like,
whoa.
Those guys couldn't live that shit down.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, it was a big deal. But my moment was seeing that movie at the Mission Theater on Lower State Street in Santa Barbara, and there were only maybe 50 punks in the whole town, maybe, you know, coming from the suburbs and everything. And they had the first. Something like 10 or 20 rows of that theater were just that concrete floor as it is, because you don't want the seats all over, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's enough room for a pit.
Yeah.
And that's what it was.
People watching for a movie.
People slamming, watching that movie, and me just going, and everybody snuck in booze, and it was just so cool. And I was like, that's it for me. Like, that's, yeah.
It's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show coming of age moment, I guess, for punk rock. Right?
But yeah, but the Narcore bands, so we would play with a lot of them, but I saw some flyers. Like, there was these flyers. It would be like free beer at the top.
Yeah.
That's how you get, and then it would say like Aggression, Dr. No. You know, Urban Assault.
Oh, I thought you meant the band Free Beer for a second, too.
Oh, there was a band.
Yeah, I know,
yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, this was like just...
No, just actually
that.
Free beer.
Yeah, I think there was a band called Beer Guts or something that would play with us, too, at that time. I don't know. But my band became... They changed the name to Secret Service, which was terrible. And, yeah, really, really poor lapse in judgment there, but I had no say in anything, so I was just this little kid they'd kick around. But I have a flyer with us like headlining and Dr. No and Aggression opening.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm just like, how did that happen? Because we were fucking terrible. Like, I mean, we were really bad. I finally heard the tape not too long ago, and I heard it, and I was like, I'm good. If I get this to anybody, it'll end up out there. And it's sort of more like about Matt. Like, I don't think anybody should hear how terrible. When we had songs, like, the lyrics were bad. We had a song called About Pigs, and my drum beat in the song was just hitting the snare and the tom, and then a floor tom and the snare. That was with a kick, and I go, dep it. For the whole
song. That
sounds
really innovative and interesting.
And then, well, I was like, all I could do.
But it sounds actually kind of cool. Like, it's like stripped down.
It could have been
selling
cool
me on this
if anybody
demo.
Could tune their guitars or, yeah. But, you know, we, of course, had a song called Ronald Reagan. I don't know.
I got to hear this now. This is like now, this becomes something that.
Yeah.
I think this needs to be out there.
Yeah, more so than the later, like, crossover years when I started getting into bands that sound like DRI and stuff. And those things have gotten out in the world, and I guess that's far more embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's embarrassing because it was like you were into all that stuff simultaneously. You're
but
into
I'm
Killers
embarrassed
and Diva.
By records I put out now. I'm weird. Like,
yeah.
Every time I put something out, I'm like, oh, God. Shouldn't I just keep this for myself?
Well, that's like, hard, right?
Like, yeah, I just don't. I
don't know. Bare your soul.
I'm not sure I was really built for that. I probably should have painted.
I kind of think that too. I think I should have gotten a trade. I should have learned how to be a plumber or a carpenter.
I tried really hard, but I wasn't good at anything.
G.G. Allen pooed on the floor and you couldn't do that. So you're like, I got only one option. I got one option.
It's true.
So what was, you know, to go way back when, what was the first show you went to? Do you remember?
Yeah. My first show was X at the Starwood. I remember it because I got taken there by some older guys. I was grounded. Like I said, I was always grounded. I mean, in a year, I was not allowed to go out of my house besides school, probably 8 months a year. Like, that's how my house was, like, really militant.
Yeah.
And I was always on the verge of being sent to military school by my parents.
Legitimately.
Yeah. In Maine kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You're going. And I even had to run away sometimes and sell drugs to, like, stay away from home and, barter with my mom till my stepdad would calm down and that if I could get, like, an agreement that I could come home, you know, that kind of shit. It was so dumb. But yeah, I'm getting off. Sorry, I just keep doing
it. No, that's also tells a story, too.
But, yeah, what were we talking about, though? I just had a brain fart.
We were talking about your first show.
Oh, yeah, so Starwood. So I would get, I would sneak out. My room was there. My parents' room was a tract home. They were on one end of the house, and I was on the other end of the house. And I would sneak out almost, like, four nights a week. I would sneak out at about 11 o'clock at night when I knew they were asleep. And I'd go out through the garage. And I would either be going out to do acid with friends, like we'd go to some playground or something, or I'd be getting picked up down the street. And sometimes, like, even running with, like, my hi-hat and, like, parts of my drums, like, just down this, like, country street, like, and there'd be a car there and get in and drive with these drunk kids down that were older than me that didn't care if they lived or died. I mean, I look back and I go, wow, I can't even believe some of the stuff we pulled off, you know?
Yeah.
But that was the first time that I got in someone's car and we went down to Hollywood and saw a show, and I was a surfer, so I was wearing, like, OP shorts, you know, like the 70s, and I had flip-flops on, or I don't know what you guys call them here.
Flip-flops.
Yeah, so I'm wearing flip-flops to my first punk show. And I remember being there with a friend and getting the lowdown on all the dudes. Like, there's John, that Circle One guy's over there. Like, those are the, you know, that group of guys. And those guys are the lads, you know.
Yeah.
This is like this early kind of hardcore sort of skinhead gang down there. That, and, you know, when you're a little kid, it's like these guys seem like serial killers, you know.
Yeah.
And so everybody's telling me about everything at that show.
Some of those people are legitimately terrifying, though.
Yeah, most of them are dead.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, or in prison or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then a lot of them, like, grow up and you meet them years later. Like, I mean, one of the most notorious guys became, like, a model or something.
Really?
Yeah. like years and years later, I like saw a picture of him and he was like, he looked like, you know, it was like a J. Crew act type ad or who knows what it was. And so, and it was like somebody had posted it, or I don't know, or maybe it wasn't that, I don't know. But I saw something that you never knew.
Yeah.
But I didn't know any of these people. I was just there and I was with my little lame friends and we were all dressed the same and we were just kind of like, this is so cool, like, and scary. But I didn't know about slam dancing, you know? I didn't know what happened. I kind of knew, but I didn't know that you couldn't be that close to stage where the band was about to start.
Especially in flip-flops.
And I, you know, you can see I'm not the tallest person. I was like, I think I was about 2 feet tall. A meter or something, you know? So yeah, it was this tiny little thing, and the whatever the band that played before him was, I can't remember, and just this pit started, and immediately lost one of my flip-flops, and so I was like one shoe guy the rest of the night, and I don't know, yeah, it was a bit of a disaster, but yeah, they got better after that.
Yeah, absolutely. So then, did you immediately start sneaking out to go to shows?
I did that a lot, yeah, I got to go to a lot of, like, really cool shows in LA and you know, of course, anytime there was anything in Santa Barbara. But I played a lot of good ones too.
Yeah, did you immediately, I guess, start playing shows?
I played in 82 or 81. I it's funny, I never quite remember the year. I did one show, I went played with Bad Brains and I got to meet all those guys and Wasted Youth, Circle Jerks and those kind of shows and then
were you at that Minor Threat show when they came out?
No, because I think that was like 84 or 83.
Yeah, maybe? 83.
And
yeah.
That was right around the time that I had been moved to the convent.
Yeah.
Or whatever, we were the hippie camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I was probably camping on an island outside of the coastline, you know, with making something on a stove that was vegetarian.
What?
Made out of twigs or something. Yeah, I mean, it was a really radical change.
Did you ever see America's Hardcore? They're a band that I've always been kind of fascinated by.
I never saw them.
They probably showed up later, actually.
Yeah, but I don't. Yeah, or I know Mike was a big fan of that band.
Yeah,
I didn't see him.
Well, when Mike was on the podcast, he talked a lot about the Gangs, and you've kind of touched on them there.
Yeah.
Did that really?
He was down there though, so he saw a lot more of that.
Yeah, thing, like, you know? Well, I guess like with the Suicidals and that sort of stuff, was that ever, or Circle One even, like, you hear crazy stories about
that. I was really into the band. I used to go to this place, Fender Ballroom.
Yeah, absolutely. I got amazing flyers for shows there.
Yeah.
Social Distortion, Youth Brigade, China White, like, and crazy stuff.
Yeah, and those shows were actually really scary because
yeah.
The Venice guys, like, I mean, you know, they're, you know, like, a lot of the shows, someone would get stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw things, you know, that you probably would be, I think I'd be more scared now
mm-hmm.
if someone came out of a pit coming up to me with blood gushing out of their stomach.
Your
I saw
kid.
That a couple times. And I would just go, wow. But it was like, I just watched Friday the 13th or something. I was like, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And scary and what the hell. But now I'd probably be like, this isn't okay. Like, you know, I'd get really, you know, I don't know. It's weird to think about that. But I think it was like one time I went in the pit when like, oh man, it was one of those Venice bands. It's probably XL or what's the one that was?
No Mercy?
Could have been No Mercy. One of the obvious ones.
Yeah.
And I was like, Beowulf, that's who it was.
Yeah,
it was Beowulf.
Yeah.
Good job. Beowulf. Nice job, man.
I'm a nerd.
I was sitting there thinking it's like a novel and...
No, I'm a nerd. I can picture the LP cover in my collection right now.
Oh,
I was doing the Mental of the Suicidal label in my head.
Yeah, the cover's great. So yeah, I think they were playing and I decided like, I'm tough enough, I can go in one of these fucking... I'm getting in there and I just got that crap beat out of me and...
Was it actually just like people beating people up at that point?
Kind of, it seemed like it to me. I mean, those were really violent pits at the Fender's Ballroom. They were really crazy.
Mm-hmm. So, at what point do you kind of like, I guess, it all come to a head? Obviously, you've got some issues going with substances at this point, and what year is that approximately when you go to the commune?
It's hard to remember because I also got sick and I had this, that's a long story.
Yeah, you don't have to go.
I missed like a year of school over all this stuff, so I guess that was when I was in probably about, like, I missed 10th grade, basically. So during that time, this whole thing happened. And basically, really was expulsion from the high school because I was so drunk, and everybody, we spray painted our, you know, logo, and all the punks like hit up the high school because we had played this party. I think Aggression played at this too, but it was just like a party at our bass player's house.
Wow.
Who, this guy Vince Peppers, who later became a bass player in RKL and Keep Laughing. You know,
Yeah.
So Vince was in Urban Assault.
Wow.
And he's the guy I think who pooped in my kick drum. But we were playing at his house.
You don't like RKL as much as Mike.
No, I love RKL.
No, I know.
I'm like,
you're a better man than I, because if someone pooped in my kick drum, I have a hard time listening to the records, no matter how good they were.
Yeah, I was like, this guy's black. I've never seen a black person before. It's almost true. I mean, yeah. Santa Barbara was... I actually grew up in a town called Camarillo, and it was far more like, you know, racially very... But Santa Barbara was really like... Yeah. But all that aside, there's a healthy dose of fear in me being around those guys. So, like, I didn't make any mistake. I mean, the few times that I spoke up, somebody would just put me in my place. Like,
yeah.
Listen, kid. And it was good. In retrospect, it was really good. They all are friends. You know, like, I know these people still.
A
few of them have passed away. But you know, Vince and I still, you know, speak. And, more recently, because one of the other guys that we knew forever and ever is... It's just gone to prison, and we've just been talking a lot lately about that because it's so fucked up. But
do you want to pause for a second? Just a word pause?
It's not even a part of it anymore. It's just make a good record so that the word of mouth is go to the show, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess it's like, I remember.
And it's fun to make them.
I remember like Mike Watt on an interview one time saying like, we never put out, we never toured to support records. We put out records to support tours, when he was talking about the Minutemen.
Yeah.
And it's like, well maybe it's back to that.
That's it.
But for everyone.
That's a good conversation actually, because I think, you know, it's something I've said a lot. I like most of the repercussions of the way things have gone, I think are actually positive things. It's sort of weeded out some of the, I don't want to say imposters, that's too strong, but people that are doing it for the wrong reason. I think you really have to love what you do to be in this game now. I mean, if it's what you love and you're passionate about it, you're going to do it, because it's not so much about any kind of stakes.
Yeah.
It's pretty impossible to have monetary success now in anywhere in our industry.
Is Joey here?
That's me.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. Right now, all stock outlets with USB ports are on sale. Ditch the need for bulky USB adapters. Upgrade your home with features like ultra-fast charging, allowing you to charge your smart devices up to 40% faster than standard USB outlets. Also, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and check out all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.